and being a part of this ODF community practice that we set up every month to just talk and educate folks about different aspects of organization design. Lately, we've been focusing a lot on D&I, and I want to thank Tom Falkowski, who is I worked with for many years. He has, I don't even know how many years you have with Kate Kessler, but many years he was worked with Greg Kessler and Amy Cates for quite a while. And last year, Kate Kessler was acquired by Accenture. So now part of Accenture, they're a practice within Accenture. And you know, Tom has worked with many different companies and executive teams just on the different aspects of organization design, focused on the STAR model, but also different aspects about what he's about to talk about as well. So, you know, there's a lot to say about Tom, but again, he's a great mentor. He is an expert, I would say, in this field. He probably wouldn't say that, but I say he is. And without further ado, I just want to hand it over to Tom and thank you very much for being a part of this and allowing us to be a part of this conversation.
Well, thanks, Cynthia. And thanks everybody for showing up. I have to give you a little bit of disclosure. I love talking in front of people. I love presenting, but this presentation in particular has been particularly challenging for me because the country is in such a crazy place right now. I think there's a lot of things that need to be said and there's a lot of things that we need to do. A little bit more on myself. I've been doing consulting for close to 30 years now. You can do the math. I'm getting up in years. I'm that old white guy, right? And over that time, I've worked with companies on five different continents. So I've seen a lot of diversity in terms of the people I work with. I've lived on three different continents. And so when I think about work, it's more normal for me to sit in a room with people from four or five different countries than it is to sit in a separate room. And so part of me just gets so frustrated that this is even an issue, that we haven't gone further than that. Companies are doing so much, but when I scratch my head and think about why aren't they doing more, why haven't we gotten further along? And so there's three things that I wanna talk to you about this morning, and we're gonna give you a little bit of a chance and a breakout to deeper into these. This first idea is, well, how do you change minds? And in my work, there's lots of things you can do to change minds. A lot of times people get intellectually bought into something, but they just don't change their behavior. So we'll talk a little bit about changing minds. I think in this space, this is an area where there's been tons of research done. There's been a lot done to change people's minds. But then again, you think about, well, why haven't we made more progress than we have? The second thing I want to talk about a little bit is changing your hearts. For any of you who have been around for a while, back in the 80s, there was this guy named Joel Barker, and he talked about changing paradigms. And he said, you don't really change paradigms until you've had a significant emotional event, something in your life that changes the way that you think about things. Well, as a collective audience, you know, we've all had a significant emotional event in 2020. And I think anybody who's lived through that has had to step back and think about, you know, how did we get to where we're at? And the last thing that I want to talk about and where we'll dig in the most is, how do you change the status quo? So it's one thing to get people bought in and change their minds. It's another to say, hey, okay, I've changed my heart. I want to get there. But then how do we really drive progress moving forward? So those are the three things that I want to talk about. I'll go through the first two pretty quickly, share some of my personal experience in the changing hearts, and then we'll get into the, you know, how do you actually change the status quo. In terms of changing minds, you know, I think about this idea that, you know, you do it with data. You know, we deal a lot with senior executives. What really resonates with them is the bottom line, how this impacts the business. And so there's a lot of data out there, and I'm not going to go through all this data. We'll send it out to you. One of the things I found, Cynthia didn't mention this, I work for Kate Kessler. We were purchased by Accenture 6 months ago. And one of the things I found about Accenture is we've gone from an organization of 15 people to 500,000. and there's tons of research in Accenture. So I've spent a lot of time over the last 3 weeks going through a lot of the research. I won't bore you with all of it, but it was super interesting. And what I found was there's a lot of research around why diversity and inclusion is the right thing to do for businesses. But also when I looked at case studies, when I looked at how mature the organizations were, they haven't made as much progress as you would think they would, especially when you have such a compelling business case. So, you know, these ideas that when you have an inclusive culture, your organization is going to exceed its financial targets, be more innovative, you know, keep people with the organization longer, and really increase commitment. Sounds like a no-brainer, right? You'd expect all the organizations to do that. This other, just some more statistics, and again, I'm not going to bore you with all of them, but you know, as you increase your diversity, your revenues increase. Sounds like a pretty good deal for a businessman. You know, it leads to more innovation. And you guys know this, right? If you have a room full of people and they all think the same way, sometimes it's hard to really push out of the box. But when you get somebody that thinks a little bit different, if you step back and you listen and you build on those ideas, it certainly drives more innovation. People are more engaged. Again, there's financial results, better customer loyalty, and this idea of, you know, bringing different points of view to be able to solve problems. So a lot of reasons to do it. And this is the last slide I'll share with you. And I'm sure you guys have done your own on this. But team performance improves. And so I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with forming, storming, norming, and performing. And what happens in homogeneous teams, they move up that curve a little bit faster. You know, we know everybody, we're the same, you know, it's easy to kind of find norms. But what happens is they plateau out. And so that really little bit of extra work, understanding how different people within your team work, really pays off in terms of setting norms that are well above the homogenous teams, and then being able to perform more effectively. And so certainly it's a little bit more work, but the payoff is there. And so again, I don't want to belabor the point, but I think it's almost, you need to at least acknowledge the fact that the result or the impact is that diversity leads to business performance. So the question that I ask is, why aren't more people doing it? As I was going through all this research, I found this one study, and you know, I couldn't find it again when I wanted to put it into the presentation, but it was really interesting. They first asked executives, do they believe diversity is important? And the overwhelming majority all said diversity and inclusion is important to our business. Then they asked them to rank order all of the things that were important. And diversity and inclusion was like sixth or seventh on a list of 10 people. And so everybody agrees that it's important, but there's all these other things in their mind that are more important. And so you wonder why you haven't made more progress. And I think one of the things that's important is, you know, how do you actually change people's hearts? So how do you move from being able to say, you know, intellectually, I get it, but, you know, I'm just not ready to jump in that. And so one of the reasons I even bothered to, I wrote a blog about this in the middle of the year. One of the reasons I did it is just, if anything, in 2020, you had to step back and think. You know, my family's been very blessed. You know, we're continuing to work. You know, a couple of my in-laws have gotten sick, but we've all been healthy. And you know, we're all in a good space, thanks to our faith, you know, emotionally, but that hasn't been the case. And when you think about all of the things that happened last year, I think anybody that is at least a little bit self-aware had to take some time thinking. You know, I was asking questions like, you know, geez, am I a racist? Was my mother a racist? You know, and going through my whole life and examining my life, what's happened, what hasn't happened. You know, I can remember talking with a bunch of friends, and we were talking about this idea of being colorblind. And you know, I'm a little bit older. I grew up in the 60s. You know, And there was a different perspective in the 60s than there is today. I'm sure some of you may have seen this, some of you may not have seen this, but there was a movie that was at its time groundbreaking, and it was Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And Sidney Poitier was dating a white woman, and you have to remember this was back in, I think, the early 60s. And so it was a big travesty, both for the woman's family, although they tended to deal with it a little bit better. It was Spencer Tracy and I can't remember who else, but and then the Sidney Poitier's dad. And there was really a poignant moment in that movie. And Sidney Poitier and his dad are talking, and they're arguing. And there's, if you haven't seen it, you should go back and try to research it. You can find the clips on YouTube. And Sidney Poitier is looking at his dad and said, "Dad, I love you, but you look at yourself as a colored man. I look at myself as a man." And in a lot of ways, that informed how I think about race in America. And whether that's right or wrong, it's part of where I come from. So I've always thought of myself as colorblind. When I was in high school, I didn't think anything different about, people that were a different race. When I was in college, 2 out of my 4 years, I had African-American roommates, never really thought about it at all. My first house was in an integrated neighborhood. So it just wasn't anything that I thought about. And then, as this year came across, I started to think, well, should I think about it? Another thing beyond that is, everybody loves Martin Luther King and the things that he said. And this is one of the most famous quotes, that you want to be judged by the color of your skin, not the content of the character. One of the things, again, doing research, I found out that he said a lot of other really neat things, but for me anyway, this was one of the quotes. What's happened though is, I've had this some significant emotional event. About 5 years ago, and I don't want to go into the details, I ended up, somebody called my wife and I said, "Would you be foster parents for these two little girls?" They had the same mother, a different father. One was African American and half African American, and the other one was, all over. We've done the DNA ancestry. We've got pins all over the world, right? But when they said that, it never even occurred to me that, the color of their skin, right? Because they're a little darker than us, never even occurred to me. But one of the things that I found out was, while it didn't matter to me, as we were walking down the streets in New York, people would look at me. I'm holding my daughter's hand, and they'd look at me a little bit different. She'd come home and she'd mention things that other people have said to her, not mean things or nasty things, but it became very clear to me that while I was colorblind, everybody else wasn't colorblind. And she was living a different reality that I couldn't really understand. I have a friend that had adopted a Chinese girl, and it was really funny. She's at college now, and we were talking about it, and he said, I was having a conversation with my daughter, and she goes, "Dad, I'm Asian, right?" And it was like, no, I don't even think about that. But the big realization for me was, while I try to think that way, I think that's a good way to think. It's not enough to think about that. You really need to think about things from other people's perspective to understand where they're coming from. And so while I still like to think that I'm colorblind, I also like to think that I need to be sensitive and understanding about where people come from and where their reality is. And that might be different than my perspective. And so I couldn't tell that story without showing a picture of my family. So this is the gratuitous family. On the left is one of the little girls. On the right is getting ready to go to the father-daughter dance, which is one of my favorite things to do. And then in the middle is the family. And the reality is I don't see any of them as any different. I think we're all the same. And as I was looking through the Martin Luther King quotes, I came up with two more that I really loved. And I think, you know, this is a probably a little bit hokey, but, you know, this first one is, you know, how are we going to get beyond this? And I think it is as hokey as it sounds. It's really love, and it's the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. And it's got this surprising power to turn things around. And then the second one that I love as well. And, you know, Martin Luther King said a lot of things, but these are two that I really like. I've decided to stick with love because hate is too great a burden to burn. So I think, you know, everybody's gone through their own journey, and understanding that, and understanding that it's not enough to really share just the facts and figures around how diversity and inclusion can improve. You need to think about where people come from and what's their personal experience relative to that. And that comes to my third element. And, you know, how do we change the status quo? What was really interesting to me in doing the research and in looking at it is, you know, while all these companies have diversity and inclusion programs, the progress has been really slow. And in some ways, you know, I think they're, you know, to go back to the title of the presentation, they're doing too little and it's really too late. I'm gonna share a couple of things with you. And this is just a framework that Accenture came up with. And I like it, but I also think that it's not sufficient. And so I think the most important thing here is strategic intent. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Some of these other things are really important as well: leadership behavior, talent actions. And then we also have this, you know, idea of maturity level. So when you think about how mature your organization is relative to diversity and inclusion, you know, there's this basic, you know, we're just going to keep ourselves out of jail and we're going to do the bare minimal. And then you have this foundation, you know, for an agenda, but you really haven't moved that far. Competitive, you're starting to gain some strengths. And then, you know, you're really integrating this into what you do and your leading practices. And one of the things that was really interesting is Accenture has gone out to different industries, to different companies, and I'm not going to share all of them with you, but the majority of the companies are in the one or two range. And so this isn't something new. I mean, we've been talking about this since the 60s, right? And so why aren't we doing a better job in terms of diversity and inclusion? I've got some thoughts on that I want to share, and we're going to do some breakouts. But before I do that, I wanted to pause there and just get a reaction for you guys. So think about your own company. I would think that if you're here, you know, your company's involved in diversity and inclusion. And where would you rate your current company? Just basic, you know, just getting started, some of the foundational things, foundational, competitive, or leading. So there's a poll on your screen. So take a minute to think about it and then submit your answer.
The votes are coming in. All right, I will go ahead and close and share.
Interesting, almost a bell curve. And I'll tell you that as a group, this team is doing a lot better than some of the Accenture clients. You know, I would say that the Accenture clients, it's almost skewed very much to one or two. So still a lot of people, you know, the majority of people in the one or twos, but a good number, almost 40% in the three and four. So probably a pretty good place as a starting point. So I want to get to the point of how do you get to a three or four? And I've been doing org design for a long time. And so unfortunately, or fortunately, I look at a lot of issues through an organization design lens. And so when I think about organizations, at Cates Kessler, we use the STAR model. It's been around for 35 years. It was developed by Jay Galbraith. And it's a way that he thinks about, that we think about organizations. And there's a couple of things that are important. You know, one is this idea that an organization is put in place to implement your strategy. And so a lot of times we'll go in and the organization just isn't aligned with the strategy. So the first thing about organizations is it needs to be able to drive your strategy. The second thing is that I like to think about is it should make it easier for people to do their job well. It should create a culture where people feel good, they feel engaged. And so both of those things are important. And the way you create an organization, an effective organization, is you think about the strategies and then you think about what are the capabilities, what's that organizational muscle that you need to be able to build to drive that organization. And then you start to think about, well, how do we organize? What's the organizing logic? How are we putting together teams? No matter how you do that, you're going to create some silos. What are the processes that we're using to connect those silos? What are the metrics that we're using? You know, people will say, and you know, whatever gets measured gets done. And so what are you rewarding for people? And then what are the people practices? And then when I look at this, and I've looked at what a lot of organizations have done around diversity and inclusion, they look at their people practices, right? But the idea of an effective organization is you need to align all of these things. And so if you go back and you say, well, have you developed strategies that are really fundamental to diversity and inclusion? And I don't mean a D&I strategy. That, you know, I think if you have a D&I strategy, it's really kind of in that one or two level. When I think about a strategy, like, are you thinking about what populations are you going after? What type of people are you going to? How is your business really driving towards diversity and inclusion? And then how do you build all those things? So when I think about too little, it's not enough to just focus on one element of the STAR model. You really need to think about all of those elements and how are they helping to build diversity. And so are your strategies thinking about, are you going into underprivileged neighborhoods? You know, who are you targeting for an audience? What are you doing to help in terms of, you know, building your communities? Those are things that are important if you really think about what you're doing around D&I. And then what are the capabilities that you're building? Are you helping to build people to become better leaders? Structurally, you know, are you creating roles that enable people to move forward? I'm going to give you a little bit of an aside. I love the NFL, but I hate them. And I don't know if anybody's followed the NFL lately. This time of year, there's always a coaching carousel. You know, people get fired, they get hired back. And it's just unimaginable that there aren't more African-American coaches in the NFL. You know, look at the percentage of players that are African-American versus white. You know, they've worked in the field their whole life. Why is it that there's this glass ceiling that there's only a couple of African-American coaches? You know, it's something systematic that's wrong with that. So anyway, a short divide, but excursion. So structurally, what are they doing about that? You know, are they being able to create roles where, you know, you start to get African-Americans into leadership roles, into roles both coaching and, you know, in ownership? And more importantly, in businesses, are you creating roles where people can grow? In terms of processes, are you getting the right people involved in certain decision-making processes? When I think about things like innovation processes, if you have all the same people making decisions around things like stage gate, you know, you're never going to move forward because everybody's thinking the same way. And so how are you involving people in key business processes, management processes, not only to take advantage of their diverse opinions, but also to help them to think about how they can grow and see how different parts of the business work? Metrics and rewards. This is actually an area where I think people are doing better. And so in terms of the metrics and rewards and people practices, I think a lot of people are starting to say, hey, we need to implement better diversity and inclusion practices, and we start to need to start measuring that. But in order to have an effective organization, you need to balance all these things. And so when you don't, what you do is you get a lot of tension. And so it becomes confusing if you have people programs that aren't aligned with your strategy. And on the one hand, business leaders are measured for trying to execute their strategy, and they see these D&I programs as one-off. How do you make sure that things are aligned around that? You know, you want to hire people into new roles, but have you created the right roles for them where they can grow? And have you put in place the right career plans for those? How are you involving them in the processes? And again, how are you tracking that? And so it's so important that, you know, it's good to have these programs, these people programs, and they're necessary, but they're just not sufficient. So if I think that, if I look and you're saying, well, you know, we've got this people practice and the metrics reward, that's too little. It's just not enough to do. You need to think about all of those things if you're really going to change the status quo. The second thing, when we think about organization design, we think about this idea that there's a process. And you know, you start with what's the problem you're trying to solve? Where are the strategic gaps? You know, then how do you structure and integrate the organization? Talent comes forth. Well, a lot of the talent, the D&I initiatives are around talent. And by then it's too late because you've created some of these organizations that don't support the strategies that you need. And so I think there's tremendous work being done. I think that we need to move faster, and I think we need to take, you know, a more holistic approach. You know, this idea that we're just doing too little, really not starting with a strategy and what capabilities we need to build, and then thinking about holistically how we build the organization. And then when we're starting to think about the organization, we need to really start with what's our strategy around diversity and inclusion, and how does diversity and inclusion actually help and augment our strategy in ways that will help us to be more successful, and then build from there. Don't wait to the end and say, oh my gosh, you know, we don't have a good format of this team. You know, you need to really start to think about that a little bit early on. So what I'd like you to do, I know I've gone through this pretty quickly. We're going to break you into small groups. And I want you to think about three questions. One is, where do you think your organization is on the D&I maturity model? And then talk a little bit about why do you think it's there and what might you do to move forward? And then using the STAR model, think about, is it a strategy gap? Is it a capability gap? Do we not have the right roles? Have we not designed the organization? So after you think about where you are on the D&I model, think about what you could do from that holistic organizational view to help to move you further down the maturity level. And then have one person be prepared to just share one or two actions from your team. We'll try to get through as many of the breakouts as we can in terms of sharing that, but think about what you can do. And so I'm gonna ask Tanya to break you guys into teams. Magically, you'll disperse. You know, keep track, you'll have 15 minutes to work on this. And then when we get back, we'll have a little bit of a discussion about it.
And I'll make a point of populating the questions in as a broadcast and kind of giving you all a bit of a time reminder so you can help keep track of that. All right. Well, thanks to everyone for sticking around and rejoining us. We had 7 breakout rooms, different conversations going on. So I will leave it with Tom to figure out how he wants to do, Cynthia, how you want to manage the share out.
So what I'm going to do is first of all, just ask for volunteers. So real quickly, you know, where your team was, what are one or two or things that, you know, maybe the rest of the organization, the rest of the group could benefit from? So any volunteers to get started? Don't be shy.
I can volunteer for room 1. So we talked about a few different things. We had people who'd worked in large organizations, consulted for lots of organizations, one person who worked for a nonprofit with 20 people in it. So a big range of how people felt like the maturity of D&I was in their orgs. Some people saying they felt like their org was a 3 or 4 and, you know, D&I was really part of the DNA and how they operate, and it's part of every conversation they have is at the heart of it. Jose, you were mentioning that at some of the other large organizations, you felt like things only happened off the back of law coming into place in the UK or wherever it was. So it was very reactive. Dishana, you were talking a little bit about how California, where your base is very cutting edge, and how you felt like there was space within your nonprofit organization for progress to be made. Something that we talked about, I hope, Dishana, I hope you don't mind me talking about your example, please tell me if not, but we were just talking about how at your organization, there needs to be more, we're talking about the STAR model and saying it needs to be more open decision-making. The decisions about the whole company, really, it sounds like, or the nonprofit, were really made by the two people at the top of the organization. And we were saying within the STAR model, process was a key one that needs to be opened up and needs to be more inclusive decision-making. And if I've butchered what you were saying, Dishana, please dive in and correct me. Or anyone else on our call, Jose and Cindy.
Looks like Dishana typed in chat. Yes, thank you, Leah.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Leah. Anyone else that would like to share any insights with the rest of the team?
I can chime in for our group. Wow, this is Lisa. We shared a lot about our different companies and countries. And when we got into talking about the STAR model, we kind of came out with a few areas of focus. One is around metrics, both in terms of needing to define, like, right up front, what does success look like and what are leading indicators. But also, there was a great call out by Kaya that a lot of times metrics, it's easy to gravitate towards the quantitative metrics, but you also need to be looking at qualitative. And then also he called out the importance of process. So we talked a bit about that as well, and that tends to be a gap. And then lastly, an observation that I brought was that I think in my organization, I think the missing link is that DEI tends to be part of our strategy, but it tends to be like a standalone pillar of the strategy. And we haven't fully baked it into all of our business strategy as a like critical success factor. So kind of as you were saying, Tom, it's more of an add-on.
Yeah, and I think that's the toughest thing to figure out. You know, that's where the magic's in the sauce, where you can think about, here's my business strategy, and here's the D&I component of it that's going to supercharge it. The only one comment I want to make about, you talked about metrics. And again, I reviewed a lot of research. One of the things that I found really interesting was we asked all these questions of executives and employees, and there's a massive gap between what executives think they're doing around D&I and what the employees actually are feeling. And so as you're collecting data, getting that stratification of who's thinking what is really important. And it shows the gap between, you know, the say-do ratio. You know, we think we're saying the right things, we're thinking we're doing the right things, but in the rest of the organization, it's not really coming through, and people have very different perceptions. Anyone else like to share what their team came up with?
Tom, just to build on that, and I was in the group with Lisa and Kaya. I think the leading indicators around the capability, it can be very helpful, because often with metrics and with data, we're looking back. And with D&I, if we think of it as a capability we're trying to build, it can be very helpful to actually identify what are some of those things that we want to observe. Like in our group, we talked about seeing leaders who traditionally haven't spoken about D&I, business leaders, now having to develop that vocabulary, having to develop the comfort to present it, talk about it, wrestle with it in public forum was actually, you know, it is a great leading indicator of building this new capability. So some of those things that may be a little bit harder to measure, but can really help people start to see and start to bridge that gap between leaders and associates.
Yeah, good. It's funny, you know, the behavior is really important, what people say. And what's really interesting is what leaders say versus what they do. And I started working on a project with a client about a month or so ago. And we put together this team, and one of the senior leaders at Accenture goes, "This team is unacceptable because it's not diverse enough." And so he made us go back and reconfigure the team because it's so important. He goes, "If I was a client, I wouldn't do business with you." And it's that kind of behavior that is so important. You hear people saying that, but you don't always see them actually acting on it. Anyone else? We've got a few minutes left.
Just one add. This is Mike McGovern. I had the good fortune working for a truck and engine manufacturer that moved diversity to a more central role. And one of the things they decided to do in terms of expanding their business is to build dealer networks or dealerships in my areas that serve minority communities and were constituted minority communities. So for example, they set up a dealer network specifically targeting people of color markets, business people who would have a need to buy trucks and service engines. So they put getting into diverse markets as part of their strategy, which then drove other things. And then the next thing that happened is, well, who could we put in the executive role to manage this process for us? They took a senior leader within the engine group to run and expand that dealer network. So, and then they provided seed money in order to facilitate that happening. So it was very interesting to see what they did actually to strategically target minority markets for business purposes, and then build the capability around that as they started moving into that market.
Yeah, I love that example. It's, you know, really saying, you know, we're going to invest in this. It's going to be part of our strategy, and it's going to be part of who I have. I love that example. Great example. One or two more groups?
I can talk about the group, and I think that we had, feel free to add in. It was a really good conversation about thought leadership. And there is a great, and Richard, if you don't mind, I'll use the example that you had on a board of a private school struggling to really think through kind of how to expand into the areas of need and providing scholarships and things like that. But this sense of whose problem is it to solve? You know, is it the problem that as this board, you know, is it all of our problem? Is it, you know, I'm bringing people of color onto the board. Is it your problem to solve? Like kind of like really asking that question, like whose problem is it to solve? And really thinking through kind of stepping back from the STAR model about accountability and where does that sit? It was a really good conversation and thinking about that.
Great. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Mike again. I have one idea I'd like to share, and I'd like other people's opinions of it. To what degree are businesses captive to the societies in which they live? And so, for example, as org designers, we are sometimes present during the conversations where the leadership team is doing some site selection on where to put a manufacturing facility or a distribution facility, those kinds of things. And the degree to which you create economic opportunity by picking a site in a disadvantaged geographical area is good, but the business alone might not be able to do it. It almost seems like the business, when it does this, needs to build a broader coalition of other organizations within that community, such as in terms of creating talent, creating relationships with junior colleges and with high schools, to build, reach out to some of the political networks within those communities and community organizations. So I think if we're going to look at how do you create more inclusive and diverse organizations, you almost have to adopt a community development mindset to see who you, what kind of coalition you can build to bring about what you need to be successful at bringing that opportunity into a diverse community.
Yeah, what's really great about that example is, I think what it shows you is you can make one, and it's not a small strategic choice, but one strategic choice that can really catapult you in a lot of different directions. And so by that one strategy, what it enabled them to do is to really think about it, you know, or to get involved in a lot of different things that have a real impact on diversity. So first off, I want to thank everybody for coming. I really appreciate it. You know, what's the call to action? I think that everything that people are doing is well, but again, I don't think it's not enough. And I think this idea, and there are a couple of examples of this, where you really have an integrated strategy where, you know, people are pushing to say, what can we do strategically that's going to help to drive our D&I agenda versus, you know, the other way around. And when you start to integrate it, thinking about where you're putting manufacturing operations, where you're opening offices, that can do an awful lot to really catapult what you're doing. The other thing is thinking about what are some of the capabilities that you're building in terms of how you develop talent for the future and how you do that in a way that's inclusive and really helping people across the broad spectrum. And the last thing is, you know, are the objectives aligned to that? And so not just the business objectives, but are you building in the right metrics to do things? There's so much we can do. I think that there's so much that people have been doing, but if you really step back and, you know, we listen to our CEO, Julie, a lot, and she, I think Accenture's made great strides, but one of the things she keeps saying is we haven't done enough fast enough. And so I think that's one of the areas that we can all do. Think about what else can we be doing to really drive this and to move faster. I want to thank everybody. I appreciate your time. I know everybody's busy. Hopefully this was beneficial to you. And I learned a lot just from listening to the breakout. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
And everyone, hope you have a great day. And like I said, I'll send out a note when I've got his deck shared and available on the our website for reference.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Awesome.